This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The news we read, hear, and watch influences the way we vote. Party establishments have long relied on the mainstream media to reinforce the broader assumptions of their political rhetoric, leaving bedrock conditions like white supremacy and global capitalism unchallenged in the headlines. But as the business of news is reshaped, how will parties get the word out? And when local newspapers fold, who is going to rein in the wrongdoing? These are questions Bob Garfield has asked in his new book. Well, in fact, it's a manifesto. He is co-host of WNYC's On the Media, and he is fed up with the fracturing of politics, media, and our society at large. The book is called American Manifesto, Saving Democracy from Villains, Vandals, and Ourselves. And Bob Garfield is on the line now. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Frank. Long time no talk, man.
It's been too long. And in the meantime, a lot has changed, and particularly in the media landscape. This book centers on the atomization, really, of American identity. And I think, you know, you understand and have written in your book how important the media have been in the modern age in shaping identity. And as the media change, it reflects our atomization in that sense, too, of who we are as Americans. Is that part of what you're getting at here?
It sure is. And I would say each alone, the fragmentation, the hyperfragmentation of America by identity, politics, and grievance is one ruinous problem. A second, the atomization of voices in the public sphere through the internet, which was supposed to be the ultimate expression of democracy, has turned out catastrophic. And in convergence, when you put those two factors together, it's actually apocalyptic. And I'm not speaking about Trumpism, which is a symptom, or I would say has been exacerbated by this convergence, but even absent the current political insanity, this would be a very, very, it would be very bad for democracy, and is.
Well, let's talk about that second point, though, this atomization through social media, through digital media that has given sort of everybody their own voice. I particularly want to talk about the role of media in creating what we had thought of as a coherent identity. That was nonsense from the start. I mean, when media became a multi-million dollar business, the idea was to create some image of an America that was cohesive, but mostly united under white bourgeois ideals. Lots of other voices were being expressed through ethnic newspapers and ethnic media, even from the beginning of the 20th century. So we were never one country. That was a bit of nonsense that was created in the business model of making newspapers, don't you think?
Well, first of all, yes. Let's start with the whole history of newspapers and pamphleteering going back to the 17th century. Back in the day, and for about 200 years, newspapers were expressly representative of a certain political party. That they were, by definition, partisan. And that's why, you know, there was the Rochester Democrat and the such-and-such Courier Republican and so on. Newspapers were an expression of a political worldview. Around World War II, or perhaps just after, the American newspapering changed a great deal. European, not so much. But there were standards of professionalism, canons of conduct that, generally speaking, required and had protocols for neutrality, lack of editorializing in the news columns, something close to objectivity. And these canons influenced journalism ever since. And, you know, as you observe, those days also coincided with a hegemony over newspapers and radio and television in most communities under a certain conservative worldview, that is to say, conservative in the sense of not being especially inclusive. And in the worst of it, when the media barons had given way to large corporations, the hegemony was governed by people who didn't even live in communities and had no stake in anything but making their products safe for advertisers. So, you know, there was a lot of criticism back in the 70s and the 80s, especially, of media concentration and the effects on democratic ideas. And then came the internet, which was supposed to be the be-all, end-all of democratic expression because now everybody had a voice. But in a bizarre and utterly unpredictable turn of events, unexpected turn of events, the hegemony is far worse than anybody had ever imagined, because even though there were millions and millions and millions of web pages and blogs and news organizations around the world, TikTok feeds, whatever, it's all controlled by Facebook and Google, what they call the duopoly. And it has had a catastrophic effect on the diversity of ideas that you can, as a citizen can be exposed to, because their algorithms feed you only what you have previously shown an inclination to consume.
At the same time, Bob, we are seeing greater diversity in representation, insistence on broader representation, insistence on a kind of language that doesn't offend in the way that that newspapers and big media could, when they assumed that everybody was white and shared in their bourgeois values, and so made all kinds of assumptions in the paragraphs they wrote that were offensive to people. Now we're pushing back, and isn't there something to be said for that kind of breadth and diversity that we really are seeing, aren't we?
Well, Frank, here is the tragedy of it. Yes, the news organizations, legitimate news organizations, and other good actors around the world are responding to issues that relate to respect and social justice and multiculturalism and all the rest. The problem is, if social justice falls in the forest and it doesn't find its way into your Facebook feed, does it make a noise? And the answer is no. Millions, hundreds of millions of people around the world, I would venture to say billions of people around the world, are not exposed to the kind of awakened media because it is, by algorithm, filtered out of their media diet. And of such things, Trumpism is built.
Well, let me ask you this, though. There is this activism and activist movements that are with us today that had not been with us and certainly not as robust. So at least those people are getting it, right? The people who are active, and they've got their movements. Is this just something that's building? It's going to take time to break through these filters. But the fact is, we have seen now a growth of movements, a proliferation, particularly among young people, that may be just in its very early stages.
It's all been great from my perspective, and I'll see your young people in, let's say, gun control stuff, and I will raise you by the entire history of American jurisprudence since World War II, because very, very gradually we have built ourselves as a liberal democracy based on the interests of interest groups. Let's just say the civil rights movement led by African Americans, and have gradually forged a path towards liberal democracy that has been followed and sometimes led by Europe and other societies around the world. Francis Fukuyama wrote a book called The End of History, where he assumed that this trend would keep going and that, as a practical matter, liberal democracy was the default way to run a society and that would never change. Now, you know, turns out that Fukuyama was wrong. We have backslid all around the world into nationalism and so forth. But whether it's the Civil Rights Act or taking prayer out of the schools, or whether it's women's rights, whether it's LGBT rights, and now finally trans rights, the spirit of the Bill of Rights is being memorialized in statute and case law. We have advanced. But here's the thing. I'm happy to report that the activism and the grievance has been sliced and diced into every finer levels, making sure that all hitherto marginalized groups have a voice, which is good. What's bad is that every advance towards liberal democracy that you and I feel is seen by large swaths of the population as slaps in the face on their values, on their history, on their power in the society. What we have embraced as the fulfillment of our founders' highest aspirations, about a third of the country sees as political correctness that is taking the power away from them and putting it in the hands of interlopers. And as a consequence, there is a backlash. And as the more that interest groups and grievance politics increases on the left, the backlash strengthens on the right. And that's what gave us the alt-right. The right has seen the success of grievance politics, and they have coalesced around the grievances of their own. It also causes internecine battles on the left, where one micro interest group is at war with a similar but nonetheless distinct micro interest group. And in the end, it causes chaos.
Bob Garfield is the co-host of WNYC's On the Media. His new book, American Manifesto, Saving Democracy from Villains, Vandals, and Ourselves. Bob, what a pleasure. Good to talk with you.
Nice speaking to you, Frank. Be well.